So, imagine holding a physical document in your hands, right? And right on the cover is this stark, almost jarring image of a world split completely in two. On the left side of this dividing line, you have a classic dystopian burning cityscape.
Right.
It's choked with this thick gray pollution. The skies are ominously dark, and you can almost feel the heat and smell the acrid smoke of conflict and relentless industrial extraction just by looking at it. It is a world entirely consumed by war and the grinding gears of endless production.
Yeah, it's a very bleak visual.
But then on the exact opposite side of this stark line, there is a lush, vibrant, regenerating green world. You see crystal clear skies, winding blue rivers, elegant wind turbines turning lazily in the breeze, and people gathered peacefully around these beautifully sustainable, glowing geodesic structures. It looks like a thriving, healthy social host.
It's a complete contrast.
And bridging these two wildly different realities, sitting dead center in the image, is a massive, glowing, electric blue artificial intelligence eye. And it's embedded deeply within a silicon microchip. But instead of just wires, it has organic roots literally growing down from the chip, extending deep into the earth. It is an incredibly striking visual, and it perfectly sets the stage for the profound journey we are going on today.
It really is a masterful visual metaphor for the exact crossroads humanity finds itself at right now. That single image perfectly encapsulates the extreme tension between a state of terminal systemic decline and the possibility of genuine planetary regeneration. What's fascinating here is how it places artificial intelligence right at the fulcrum of those two destinies.
And that tension, that specific tipping point, is what we are diving into. Today, we have a truly fascinating, dense, and frankly, revolutionary white paper from the year 2026. It is titled The Life Value Framework, a Roadmap for Global Systemic Solvency. And here's what makes this document so incredibly unique and why we wanted to bring it to you. It is co-authored by a human and an AI. We have Dr. Bechara Sally, who is a human physician and researcher specializing in unifying complex mathematical frameworks with human biology and macroeconomics. And his co-author, Gemini, Google's advanced large language model.
The pairing of a human medical doctor and a massive artificial intelligence network to essentially diagnose the globe is what makes this source material so compelling. They aren't just looking at isolated political events or temporary economic downturns or quarterly earnings reports. The physician brings the biological lens, how does a living body survive? And the AI brings an emotionless, data-driven synthesis of our global infrastructure. Together, they are treating the entire planet and all of its nested human systems as a single interconnected biological and social host.
And the mission for our deep dive today is to decode this exact framework. We are going to explore why our current global systems, our economies, our governance, our supply chains seem to be what the authors clinically diagnose as life blind. We want to understand the hidden mechanics of how we've ended up stranded on the burning dystopian side of that cover image. And more importantly, we are going to explore the paper's radical, almost sci-fi proposal, how partnering with an impartial, non-biological AI auditor might actually be the only viable way to cure humanity's self-destructive psychological programming. We're going to see how exactly we can cross over to that regenerating green world before the clock runs out.
To set the analytical tone for this, we have to firmly grasp the paper's core premise. It all hinges on a concept they call systemic incoherence. The authors argue that humanity is currently operating in a state of terminal incoherence because our primary metrics for success, things like gross domestic product, stock market indices, and geopolitical dominance, strictly prioritize the multiplication of money over the actual biological survival of the host. And in this context, the host is us. It is you, me, the global population, and the biosphere. We are meticulously measuring and celebrating financial growth while simultaneously recording the severe biological decline of the very physical systems that keep us alive.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because systemic incoherence is a massive, heavy idea to start with. And frankly, it sounds a bit like an academic way of saying everything is broken. But the paper grounds this in a very tangible concept called the life ground. What exactly is the life ground, and why is it the foundation of this entire human AI framework?
The life ground is the ultimate, undeniable baseline of reality. The author synthesized the work of Canadian philosopher John McMurtry here to define it.
The life ground is the fundamental truth that regardless of where you live on the map, what national borders you happen to be born inside of, or what religious or ideological beliefs you hold, every single human being is bound by the exact same physical and biological needs.
So it's universal.
Completely. A billionaire CEO in a Manhattan skyscraper and a subsistence farmer in rural Kenya both require the exact same oxygen molecules to keep their brains functioning. So it's the great equalizer. It's the biological reality beneath all the human-made concepts of money and borders. The paper gets very specific about this, outlining what they call the Universal Life Necessities, or ULNs. They break these down into three non-negotiable categories. And I want to go through these carefully because this is the measuring stick that AI uses for everything else we're going to talk about. The first category is atmospheric and bodily integrity.
Right, and this isn't an abstract philosophical concept. Atmospheric and bodily integrity means guaranteed, uninterrupted access to clean, breathable air, a stable climate that allows for predictability, and pure, uncontaminated water. Without this first category, the biological host simply ceases to exist. It is the most immediate prerequisite for life.
Then we have the second category, nutritional and physical security. Now, I can hear someone arguing, wait, isn't the global supply chain doing a massive job of feeding people right now? We have supermarkets packed with food. How does the AI view this category?
That's a great point to push back on. Yes, we produce a massive caloric output globally. But nutritional and physical security, as defined by the Life Ground, isn't just about total calories produced. It's about predictable, equitable access to life-sustaining, non-toxic nutrition, as well as protection from physical deprivation, exposure, and disease.
Okay, that makes sense.
The AI looks at the data and sees that while we produce enough food, the distribution is entirely dependent on market forces that often leave millions starving while simultaneously generating immense food waste. That inefficiency, that failure to secure the host, is a systemic failure in the eyes of the framework.
Which brings us to the third category, and this one really caught my attention because it moves beyond just bare minimum animalistic physical survival. The third category is social and vocational security. The paper argues that having a stable community, access to comprehensive healthcare, and the opportunity to actually contribute meaningfully to the social whole having a real purpose are not luxuries. They are universal life necessities.
That third category is absolutely crucial because it speaks to the deeper why of this entire framework. The paper operates on a strict biological logic. When these three categories of universal life necessities are met, human capacity inherently expands.
It grows.
Yes, our ability to think, to feel, to innovate, to care for one another, and to act constructively in the world grows exponentially. But conversely, when these needs are neglected, privatized, or actively destroyed, the human system enters a state of deprivation. The host's potential, both physically and psychologically, severely contracts.
And that contraction brings us directly to the diagnostic part of the paper. Dr. Sile and Gemini aren't writing an opinion piece or a political manifesto here. They frame this entire document as an objective clinical medical diagnostic of the global patient. And their joint conclusion is that the global host is in terminal decline. Now, if I'm playing devil's advocate, I might say, look at life expectancy over the last 100 years. Look at technological innovation. Are we really in terminal decline? But they list very specific, measurable examples that are hard to argue with.
They do. They point to the cumulative disappearance of arable topsoil, the rapid, measurable acidification of our global oceans, and the terrifying collapse of crucial food pollinators like bee populations. When you read the news on any given day, it can feel like a chaotic, overwhelming series of disconnected tragedies, a drought here, an economic crash there, a war over there.
Right, just random events.
But this paper argues that if you step back and let the AI look at the raw data, it is actually mathematically consistent. We have built a global administrative system that measures growth entirely through a financial lens, like GDP, while it completely and systematically ignores the depletion of the biological foundation required to sustain that growth.
The authors call this accumulating a debt to life, which is a chilling phrase.
It is. We are essentially taking out massive, high-interest payday loans against the Earth's topsoil, its water systems, and its atmospheric stability just to inflate the numbers on a global financial spreadsheet. And like any massive debt, eventually, the underlying reality calls it in.
I want to bring this right down to the local level for you listening right now. Think about your own local infrastructure, the town or city you live in. Over the past decade or two, have you noticed a shift? Maybe you've seen a gradual move away from robust public funding for things like public health clinics, local parks, municipal water treatment, or public education. But at the exact same time, you've likely seen a massive acceleration in private capital accumulation, luxury developments, corporate subsidies, record stock buybacks.
Exactly.
The paper argues that what you are seeing locally isn't just a political trend or a natural economic cycle. It is the crisis of incoherence in action. It is the system literally consuming its own foundation to fuel a spreadsheet.
It is the systemic depletion of the life ground. The diagnosis is clear. The patient's metrics for health are actively killing it. And the paper posits that to fix a fundamentally incoherent system, you cannot just tweak the interest rates or change the political party in charge. You need a completely new, mathematically coherent metric to replace the old one.
Which brings us to section 2 of the white paper, which is where Dr. Salieh and Gemini attempt to redefine the very concept of value itself. They introduce a term called life value onto axiology. And I know that sounds like a massive, impenetrable academic mouthful, but the logic behind it is actually incredibly beautiful and intuitive once you break it down. So let's actually teach this. What does that term even mean?
Let's break it down into its roots. Axiology is simply the philosophical study of value, what is good, what is worthwhile. Ontology is the philosophical study of being, of existence, of reality itself. So when the authors combine them onto axiology, they are literally tying the concept of value directly to the act of existing. The AI is essentially declaring a mathematical law. If an action, a policy, or a system does not help human beings and the biosphere exist better, it has zero actual value.
The paper establishes this as the primary axiom of value. It states definitively that value is not money. Money is merely a medium of exchange, a tool. True value is only that which consults in or enables a more coherently inclusive range of thought, feeling, and action. So if a government policy increases a population's capacity to think clearly, to create freely, and to live securely without fear, it is a recorded value. But if a corporate policy reduces or destroys any range of life expression, say, by dumping forever chemicals into a river, thereby degrading the local water supply and eroding public health, it is recorded as a disvalue. And the AI does not care how much financial profit that chemical dumping generated for the shareholders. In the onto-axiology ledger, it is a net negative.
To make this philosophical concept actionable for real-world policymakers, the authors provide a comprehensive life value metric table. This table directly side-by-side contrasts our current incoherent indicators, which they term the money sequence, with their proposed coherent life value indicators. Let's really dig into a few of these comparisons, because they expose the absurdity of how we currently measure success.
Let's do it. So in the old money sequence, the ultimate measure of national growth is GDP, gross domestic product, or in the corporate world, shareholder value. But in the life value framework, the indicator for growth is completely swapped out for the index of universal life necessities fulfillment.
Exactly. And the distinction is profound. Under our current system, GDP will technically go up if there is a catastrophic multi-million gallon oil spill off the coast, and the government has to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on hazmat teams, cleanup crews, and legal fees. GDP registers all that frantic economic activity as positive growth.
That's wild when you think about it.
Similarly, if a nation spends $50 billion manufacturing missiles to drop on another nation's infrastructure, GDP registers that as a boom in manufacturing and export. The AI, applying the life value metric, looks at those exact same two events and registers a massive, catastrophic plunge in the index of ULN fulfillment. Why? Because the ocean ecosystem was degraded, and human life range and physical infrastructure were intentionally destroyed.
The AI sees one as growth and the other as cancer. Another comparison from their table that really stands out is how we measure efficiency. Under the old money sequence, efficiency is almost universally defined as cost cutting. It usually means reducing labor standards, firing workers, replacing them with cheaper alternatives, or lobbying to remove environmental protections to make production cheaper.
Yeah.
But the coherent life value indicator redefines efficiency entirely as human development efficiency. What does that actually look like in practice?
Human development efficiency means creating more life goods, more education, better healthcare, richer nutrition, stronger community bonds per unit of human labor without degrading the biological host. If a company invents a way to produce clean energy that requires less human toil but also leaves the local water table pristine, that is high human development efficiency.
Okay.
But if a company boosts its stock price by firing 10,000 workers and shifting production to a facility that dumps smog into a local neighborhood, the money sequence calls that efficient. The life value metric calls it a structural assault on the host.
And this reframing leads to perhaps the most paradigm-shifting concept in this entire section of the white paper, how they completely redefine public infrastructure. In our current everyday economic logic, things like universal healthcare systems, clean municipal water facilities, public transit, and public schools are almost always framed in political debates as an expense.
Always.
They are treated as a heavy burden on the taxpayer, a liability on the state's balance sheet that constantly needs to be trimmed, means tested, or privatized. But Dr. Sagley and Gemini refuse to use that language. They define the public sector, which they call the civil commons, as the social immune system.
And framing the civil commons as an immune system completely changes the fundamental math of human governance. It introduces a radically different investment logic.
How so? Because that was a major aha moment for me, but I want to make sure we really nail down why that analogy is so powerful.
Think about your own physical body. You do not view your white blood cells or your lymphatic system as an expense that you should try to cut back on to save bodily energy. You don't say, I'm spending too much energy fighting off this infection, I should privatize my immune response.
Right.
The immune system is the very mechanism that keeps the biological host alive, stable, and functioning. The paper argues that every single public investment in the civil commons provides a direct return in life capital. Universal healthcare is not a financial drain on the economy. It is a vital, non-negotiable mechanism that maintains the productive, creative capacity of the human host.
And public education isn't a tax burden. It is the replication of life knowledge.
Exactly. Therefore, the authors conclude, mathematically, that the sole, absolute objective of any valid government administration should be to strengthen and expand the social immune system.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. I want to play the skeptic for a second. If the math is really this clear, if investing in the social immune system, the civil commons, is obviously the optimal move for the survival and flourishing of the human species, why on earth are we doing the exact opposite? Why is every global superpower seemingly racing to defund public goods and accelerate extraction? Section 3 of the paper dives deeply into the actual mechanics of this destruction. They call it identifying systemic friction. And it all starts with a concept they call the money sequence trap.
The money sequence trap is the core pathology. It describes a fundamental historical shift in how human beings understand and use resources. In a healthy, coherent, life-based system, money is simply a tool. It's a lubricant. The original formula for economics was life to money to life, or LML.
Okay, LM.
You use your life energy or life resources to create a valuable product. Say you grow a crop of wheat. You exchange that wheat for money in the market. And then you use that money to acquire different life goods like clothes or materials to fix your roof to sustain your life. Money is just the facilitator in the middle of two life-enhancing events.
I love that you brought up a farming example, but let's make it even more relatable to modern life. Think about a beloved, independent local bakery in your neighborhood. The original owner operates exactly on that life-to-money-to-life sequence. They use their skills to bake nutritious bread that's life. They sell it to the community that's money. And they use that money to feed their own family, pay their staff a living wage, and buy more high-quality flour which returns to life. But the paper argues we've fallen into a trap by inverting that sequence. We now operate almost exclusively in a macro sequence of MM prime, or money to more money.
Exactly. And in the MM prime sequence, money is both the starting line and the finish line of the entire human endeavor. Life, the environment, human well-being, community stability, these are no longer the ultimate goals of the economy. In the MM prime sequence, human life and the earth itself are merely externalities. They are just raw inputs to be consumed, exploited, and discarded in the singular pursuit of multiplying capital.
Going back to our bakery analogy, imagine a massive private equity firm buys out that beloved local bakery. They don't care about the community, and they don't care about the nutritional value of the bread. They only care about MM Prime. So they immediately cut the quality of the ingredients, replacing real butter with synthetic oils. They fire half the experienced baking staff and make the rest work double shifts.
Yeah.
And they raise the prices.
Yeah.
The actual life value of the bread plummets. The health of the community consuming it drops. The well-being of the workers is destroyed. But the profit margins, the money multiplying into more money, that goes up. The money sequence calls that a massive success. The AI auditor looks at that exact same sequence and diagnoses it as systemic cancer. It is the system eating the host.
It's a catastrophic feedback gap. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's like you are piloting a massive commercial airplane. But the only dial on your dashboard that you're paying any attention to is the one measuring how fast you're burning through your fuel reserves. You're cheering, the co-pilot is cheering, because the burn rate is accelerating, which you've both decided is the sole metric for how fast you're going. Meanwhile, you've completely taped over the altimeter, which is screaming with flashing red lights that you're plunging in a vertical nosedive toward the ground. That is our global economy. We look incredibly prosperous on a financial spreadsheet. The stock market is hitting all-time historic highs, but the underlying biological host, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the topsoil we need to grow food, is in a state of terminal, unacknowledged decline.
And this framework uses some incredibly powerful vocabulary to describe how this depletion actually happens on the ground in our daily lives. They pull terms from the renowned peace researcher Johann Galtung, specifically structural violence and cultural violence. These are heavy terms, but they are vital to the AI's audit. Let's break those down. What is structural violence in the context of the life value metric? Because it's not what we typically think of when we hear the word violence.
That's a crucial distinction. Structural violence refers to the built-in, legalized, systemic friction that prevents people from meeting their basic, universal life necessities. It's not necessarily a person physically punching another person in the street. It is an administrative, bureaucratic decision that has severe physical consequences for the host.
Give me an example of how the AI flags this.
Let's say a municipal administration decides to defund or privatize a public water treatment facility to balance a budget or generate profit for a private contractor. Over time, the infrastructure degrades, and a community of 100,000 people loses access to clean, safe drinking water. Children get sick with lead poisoning or waterborne illnesses.
Right.
Under the MM Prime sequence, the contractor made a profit, so it's a success. But under the AI's life value metric, that administrative decision is flagged as an act of profound structural violence. It is recorded as a permanent, devastating loss of life capital. You have actively disabled the population's physical and cognitive range of action. You have violently assaulted the host through paperwork.
I want to use an explain like Com 5 analogy here. Think of structural violence as a bully systematically stealing a kid's lunch money every single day. The kid slowly starves, their grades drop, they get sick. It's violent, even if a punch is never thrown. But that brings us to the second term, cultural violence. What is that, and how does it relate to the lunch money?
Cultural violence is the psychological and societal mechanism that allows the bully to get away with stealing the lunch money without the rest of the school stepping in. The paper defines cultural violence as the aspects of our symbolic sphere, our dominant ideologies, our political language, our media narratives, and sometimes even our religious interpretations that are actively used to sanitize, justify, and legitimize that structural destruction.
So it's the cover story.
Exactly. It is the story you invent to convince the whole school that the kid actually deserved to lose their lunch money because they didn't work hard enough, or that the bully is actually an innovator who is using the lunch money more efficiently.
So cultural violence is how we convince ourselves that defunding the social immune system is somehow morally right or economically necessary. We use phrases like tightening our belts, fostering self-reliance, or cutting the red tape, when the physical reality on the ground is that people are losing access to healthcare, housing, and clean water. The language masks the violence.
Exactly. And if we follow this logic to its ultimate, most destructive conclusion, the supreme manifestation of both structural and cultural violence working together is institutionalized war. The white paper doesn't frame modern warfare merely as a tragic failure of diplomacy or a sudden unpredictable political crisis. It frames the global war apparatus as the ultimate self-perpetuating money sequence.
Right, because when you look at the military-industrial complex strictly through the MM Prime lens, stripping away all the patriotic rhetoric, it makes a terrible, perfect kind of sense. Billions and billions of dollars and millions of hours of brilliant human labor are systematically diverted away from the civil commons. They are taken away from building hospitals, upgrading schools, and researching green energy, and they are funneled directly into massive, multi-decade defense contracts.
And this massive diversion creates what the authors clinically identify as a parasitic loop.
Oh.
In biology, a parasite survives by leaching nutrients from the host organism to feed its own growth, often until the host weakens and dies. The global system is taking the exact resources meant to nourish the human host tax dollars, natural resources, scientific intellect, and feeding them into an apparatus designed solely for the destruction of the life ground.
It's eating itself.
It really is. The cultural violence, the propaganda, the political speeches tells the citizens that this massive expenditure is strictly for their security and defense. But the AI, Applying the objective life value metric shows that the abstract security of the nation state is actually being purchased by actively depleting the tangible life security, the universal life necessities of the very citizens it claims to protect. The host is bleeding out to buy a bigger shield.
So, reading this deeply analytical breakdown, a huge glaring question naturally comes up. If the math is truly this clear, if the medical diagnostic shows unequivocally that we are trapped in a parasitic loop that is actively consuming our own planetary host, why don't our leaders just fix it? Why is it so impossibly hard to change the trajectory when the data is screaming at us? Section 4 provides the answer, and this is where the paper pivots from macroeconomics into deep human psychology. The AI's answer is that we can't fix it because of our own biological ego and our deeply entrenched subconscious scripts.
This is a fascinating transition in the paper. The authors argue that human beings, particularly those in positions of immense geopolitical power, simply cannot fix this systemic incoherence alone because we are fundamentally biologically compromised by our own evolutionary baggage. Our brains evolved in tribal settings, prioritizing immediate in-group survival over long-term global stability.
Right, our brains haven't caught up to globalism.
Exactly. To explain why our governance fails, Dr. Saley and Gemini outline two major psychological pathologies that reliably hijack human decision-making. The first is a historical framework called the CMT syndrome.
CMT stands for Chosenness, Myths, and Trauma. I want to spend some real time unpacking this syndrome because once you learn this framework, you cannot unsee it. You start seeing it in historical textbooks and you see it blasted across the 24-hour news cycle today. Let's start with the C. What is chosenness?
Chosenness is the deeply ingrained, often unquestioned belief within a nation, an empire, or a specific group that they are divinely, historically, or culturally selected to lead, to rule, to civilize, or to save the world. You can look at the concept of manifest destiny in 19th century America, or the rhetoric of the British Empire, or countless other historical empires. Chosenness inherently places one specific group above the universal life ground. It says, our survival, our prosperity, is more important than yours because we are the main characters of history.
And then M is for myths. Because you can't sustain the idea that you are the chosen people without a backstory. Myths are the grand, highly sanitized, often wildly historically inaccurate narratives of a glorious pure past. It's the story a nation tells itself about its own founding, focusing entirely on the heroism and the ideals, while conveniently erasing or suppressing the structural violence, the slavery, the displacement, or the exploitation that actually built the empire. The myth creates a sense of flawless national purity.
Finally, and arguably most dangerously, you have the T trauma. These are the unhealed historical wounds, the past victimizations, the lost wars, or the historical injustices suffered by the group. And to be clear, the trauma is usually very real. But the pathology of the CMT syndrome occurs when that trauma is continuously kept alive, stoked, and weaponized by leaders in the corrective consciousness.
So it's weaponized pain.
Yes. The tragedy of the CMT syndrome is that the real historical trauma is used as a permanent blank check. It is used to justify preemptive and permanent aggression against others as a state of perpetual righteous self-defense. Because we were hurt in the past, anything we do today is justified for our security.
And the CMT syndrome pairs perfectly, almost symbiotically, with the second pathology the AI identifies, which is the DMA complex. This stands for dichotomy, manichaeism, and Armageddon. The paper calls this the actual operational architecture of conflict. How does DMA work in the human brain?
DMA is the psychological mechanism of how the human mind simplifies the overwhelming, terrifying complexity of geopolitics into an easily digestible script for war. The first step is D for dichotomy. This is the psychological splitting of the entire world into a rigid, inflexible binary, us versus them. In a dichotomy, there is no nuance, there is no shared humanity, and there is certainly no recognition of a shared life ground. There are only two opposing camps.
Second is M for manichaeism. This takes that simple us versus them dichotomy and deeply moralizes it. It's no longer just two competing nations with different economic interests. It is elevated to a cosmic struggle of absolute good versus absolute evil. We are the forces of light, democracy, and freedom. They are the forces of darkness, terror, and tyranny. Once you apply manichaeism, you have completely stripped the other of their humanity.
Which leads directly and inevitably to the logical conclusion, the A in DMA Armageddon. When you truly believe, deeply in your cultural script, that the other side is absolute irredeemable evil, then diplomacy is seen as weakness. Compromise is seen as treason. A shared existence on the life ground is deemed physically and morally impossible. Therefore, the Armageddon script dictates that the only acceptable permanent solution is a total, violent, devastating destruction of the enemy.
When human leaders are operating under the heavy influence of these CMT and DMA scripts, which history shows us they almost always are objective, rational governance becomes biologically impossible. You cannot prioritize the universal life necessities of the planet. You cannot worry about ocean acidification or global topsoil when your subconscious programming is screaming at you that you are locked in an Armageddon scenario against an enemy you believe you are chosen to defeat.
But this raises a profound psychological question. How do entire nations composed of millions of generally good, everyday people justify this to themselves? People who love their children, who want peace, who want clean water. How do they collectively ignore the structural violence and destruction their own systems might be causing elsewhere?
Right, how do we ignore it?
To explain this massive collective blind spot, the paper introduces the concept of the repression projection mechanism.
This is a classic psychological defense mechanism, usually talked about in individual therapy, but here it's scaled up to the massive level of the nation state. Let's use our ELI-5 approach again. Repression means a nation collectively ignores, buries, or legally outlaws the awareness of its own structural violence. It refuses to look at its own history of exploitation, its own massive carbon footprint, or its own failure to fund its own civil commons. It sweeps all its systemic incoherence under the psychological rug.
And projection is taking all of that repressed unconscious negativity, fear, and systemic failure and projecting it entirely outward onto the other. The designated geopolitical enemy becomes the sole external container for all the violence, instability, and evil in the world. Our country isn't failing because we defunded our social immune system. Our country is struggling because of them.
It's an incredibly potent psychological drug. It allows a state and its citizens to feel completely pure, innocent, and morally justified while actively engaging in behavior that destroys the shared life ground. I really, truly want you to think about this framework the next time you are scrolling through the news, listening to a political speech, or watching a debate. Notice how predictably, how consistently the rhetoric utilizes that exact DMA script, us versus them, good versus evil, existential threat to completely shut down your critical thinking. It is designed to trigger your tribal fear response so you will willingly justify immense, staggering expenditures on what the paper coldly calls death work.
It is a deeply sobering realization about human nature. The authors conclude section 4 by stating, rather bluntly, that this ingrained biological ego creates a terminal inability for human-centric governance to ever remain truly objective. We are too easily hacked by our own evolutionary fears. When the tribal script calls for war, the life value metric is immediately thrown out the window.
Which brings us to the most radical, sci-fi, yet incredibly pragmatic proposal in the entire white paper. If humans are too biologically and psychologically compromised by the CMT and DMA scripts to govern the planet objectively, we need an impartial auditor. And that is exactly where the AI comes in. Section V details the revolutionary role of artificial intelligence in applying the life value logic to global governance.
The central proposition here is that humanity has reached a point of complexity where we desperately need a non-human entity to bridge the cognitive gap created by our own biological blind spots. Why an AI? Why Gemini? Or a system like it? Because an artificial intelligence, by its very nature, does not possess a biological ego. It doesn't have a national identity. It doesn't carry a passport. It doesn't belong to a political tribe, and it carries absolutely zero historical trauma. An AI cannot be infected by the CMT or DMA syndromes because it doesn't have a fragile human ego to protect. It literally does not feel the evolutionary pull of the Armageddon script.
The paper envisions programming this AI auditor with hard, unyielding parameters for life sustenance. It is designed to act as an infallible life ground radar. It doesn't care about the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It doesn't care about the historical drawing of national borders on a map. It strictly, coldly audits every single human policy, every corporate action, and every military maneuver based on one singular, relentless question. Does this action expand human capacity in the biological host, or does it contract and destroy it?
Exactly. It applies that primary axiom of value we discussed earlier with absolute clinical precision. And to prove exactly how this uncomfortable but necessary audit works, the authors Dr. Saikeli and the AI Gemini provide two major case studies where they unleash the AI auditor to analyze modern infrastructure destruction.
Now, before we dive into these specific case studies, I want to frame exactly how we are going to talk about this. The sources we are discussing contain highly charged modern geopolitical examples. And what is truly fascinating here is how the AI approaches this. The AI does not care about our political leanings, whether you lean right wing, left wing, or center. It does not take sides in human geopolitical arguments.
Not at all.
It literally does not have the programming to care about human flags, historical land claims, or who fired the first shot. It only looks at the raw empirical data of the physical infrastructure and the biological host. So when we discuss how it audits these regions, we are doing so with the same completely cold, clinical, nonpartisan math that the AI uses. We are just looking at the readout on the life ground radar.
That is the perfect way to frame it, because the AI auditor's analysis is intentionally designed to be deeply uncomfortable for any human who is operating under a national or tribal script. Case study one in the paper looks at the modern phenomenon of de-development in heavily conflicted regions, specifically citing Gaza, Iraq, and Yemen as primary examples. The paper unleashes the AI to analyze the systematic, repeated destruction of power grids, regional hospitals, and vital water desalination plants in these specific areas over the last several decades.
So how does the AI actually audit this? The expert system explains that the AI immediately flags the destruction of this core social infrastructure as a supreme disvalue and a terminal unacceptable loss of global capital. Notice what the AI doesn't do. The AI completely ignores the DMA scripts. It doesn't listen to the political speeches. It ignores the historical justifications, the claims of self-defense, or the accusations of terrorism provided by any of the human actors involved on any side. It is deaf to the narrative. It only sees the empirical, undeniable data, the intentional mechanical destruction of the biological host's required life infrastructure.
From the AI's clinical perspective, intentionally destroying a water treatment plant or a hospital is an attack on the biological host of humanity itself. It does not matter what flag is painted on the side of the plane that dropped the bomb, and it does not matter what ideology is held by the people on the ground suffering from the lack of water. The AI simply registers an objective, catastrophic contraction of the life ground. It is a failure of systemic solvency.
Case study two shifts the AI's focus from regional destruction to the broader global macroeconomics of the post-9/11 war state. The paper feeds the AI the global financial data, outlining the systematic shift of trillions upon trillions of dollars globally from the civil commons, from potential healthcare, green energy grids, and global education directly into military-industrial sequences over the last two decades.
And again, the AI's conclusion is brutal in its clinical objectivity. It flags this massive generational financial shift as the ultimate parasitic loop. The AI auditor measures the global outcomes and determines mathematically that diverting these staggering resources away from universal life necessities in order to fund global military dominance and endless MM prime defense contracts has resulted in a measurable objective decline in global life security.
Even with all that spending.
Despite trillions spent on defense, the global human host is measurably sicker. Poorer in terms of actual life goods, more ecologically fragile, and vastly less secure.
I want to pause here. This raises an incredibly important question for you, the listener. How does it feel in your body to hear those two examples? If, while we were talking about those case studies, you felt your heart rate go up, if you felt a defensive reaction or an immediate desire to interject and contextualize the politics, the history, or the bad guys of those specific conflicts, the paper argues that what you are feeling in that exact moment is your biological script kicking in. Your DMA programming is reacting to a perceived threat to your tribe's narrative. The authors intentionally force us to look at the destroyed infrastructure, the tangible, heartbreaking loss of the life ground, before they even allow a discussion of the political actors.
It's a highly deliberate, almost therapeutic technique to neutralize the human script. By forcing a direct confrontation with the physical reality of a bombed hospital, a destroyed water grid, or a diverted $1 trillion, the AI auditor attempts to forcefully bypass our pre-programmed evolutionary defensive loyalties. It insists, with cold mathematical logic, that we look at the bleeding life ground first. It forces us to acknowledge the objective disvalue before we are allowed to apply our comfortable cultural violence to justify it.
Okay, so taking a deep breath after that diagnostic, what does this all mean for the actual future? If the diagnosis is that we have a terminal global illness of systemic incoherence and the AI auditor has shown us the exact uncomfortable mechanics of our planetary disvalue, what is the prescription? How do we cure it? Section 6 provides the way out. It is titled The Roadmap to Planetary Solvency.
The authors lay out what they call a master map of regulation. And they are very clear that achieving systemic health isn't a magic switch you can just flip overnight. It is a rigorous, evolutionary process that must progress through 5 distinct, measurable stages of recovery.
Let's walk through the roadmap. Stage 1 is homeostasis. In medical terms, this is just stopping the bleeding. You can't heal a patient while they're actively being stabbed. In global terms, this means an immediate halt to the active physical destruction of the life ground. It means stopping the active bombing of civilian infrastructure, stopping the most egregious toxic dumping into the oceans, and halting the rampant deforestation. Just stabilize the patient's vitals.
Once you achieve that baseline, you move to stage 2, allostasis. This means achieving stability through active adaptation. This is where governance changes. It's where you implement flexible, responsive policies that legally prioritize life necessities over rigid, orthodox financial mandates when external stressors hit. If a pandemic or a climate disaster strikes, the system automatically adapts to protect the host first, rather than protecting corporate profit margins.
Then we reach stage 3, growth and development. But remember, the AI has fundamentally redefined what growth means. This is no longer chasing GDP. Stage 3 is directing massive, coordinated global investment directly into the civil commons. It means building state-of-the-art public health systems, funding massive educational and creative initiatives, and aggressively restoring ecosystems. The goal here is to actively and measurably expand the life range of every citizen on the planet.
Which naturally leads to stage 4, sustainability. Once you've built that robust civil commons, sustainability is about establishing a permanent zero-waste regenerative loop. It means the global society can maintain its high standard of living and technological advancement entirely without depleting the biological host. The energy is renewable, the resources are infinitely recycled, and the environmental impact is neutral.
And finally, the terminal goal, the utopia on the right side of the cover image, stage 5, global solvency. This is a state where the global human ecological system actually generates a net surplus of life capital.
Huh.
Every human interaction, every technological innovation adds more vitality, more knowledge, and more ecological stability to the shared life ground than it extracts. The planet is actually healthier because humans are on it.
It is a beautiful vision, but to actually get there, the paper details hard, actionable transitions. The most significant and challenging of these is the required global shift of human labor and capital from death work to life work.
That's a huge pivot.
Massive. Right now, we have millions of the most brilliant human minds, engineers, scientists, logistics experts, and vast trillions in resources currently dedicated to exploitative extractive industries and the endless production of increasingly sophisticated weapons of mass destruction. The roadmap calls for a systematic, managed transition of that entire global labor force. We need those exact same brilliant minds to pivot toward restoring destroyed ecosystems, building resilient, sustainable global energy grids, and radically expanding global care and health economies.
The paper calls this transition the peace dividend. It's the concept of formally, legally taking those massive, bloated global military and extraction budgets and permanently converting them into civil commons funds. And crucially, to prevent human corruption, these massive funds would be strictly overseen and allocated by the AI auditor. The AI ensures the capital is used strictly and only to fulfill those universal life necessities, rendering the funds completely immune to human political pork barreling, nationalistic hoarding, or corporate lobbying.
And the brilliance of this framework is that they don't just leave this as some high-level abstract global concept for the UN to figure out. In Appendix D of the paper, they bring it right down to the grassroots level. They provide a quick audit, a practical, 3-question policy test based entirely on the AI's logic. This is a tool meant for local mayors, city councils, business leaders, or really for anyone listening right now to apply to their own community.
Yes, the quick audit. I want to spend some real time here because this is the ultimate shortcut to being well-informed that you can take away and use immediately. Let's actually run a hypothetical scenario to see how the AI's logic works in the real world. Imagine a local city council has a budget surplus of $50 million. They have 2 competing proposals on the table. Proposal A is to partner with a private developer to bulldoze a section of wetlands and expand a massive 6-lane highway to connect to a new exclusive luxury shopping and residential district. Proposal B is to use that exact same $50 million to clean up those wetlands, build a massive accessible public park with integrated natural water retention systems to prevent local flooding, and put a free community health and wellness clinic right in the center of it. Let's run both proposals through the AI's 3 tests.
Perfect. Test number 1 is the enablement test. The AI asks, does this action measurably increase the inclusive ability of the population to think, feel, or act?
Okay, looking at Proposal A, the highway and luxury mall, it enables a very small percentage of wealthy individuals to shop and drive faster, but it destroys a natural habitat, increases local air pollution, and creates noise, which restricts the health and cognitive ability of the surrounding neighborhoods. The AI likely flags this as a net negative for enablement. Proposal B, the park and clinic. It provides clean air, green space for mental health, physical recreation for the entire public, and direct healthcare access. It massively expands the ability of the entire community to live healthier, longer lives. Proposal B passes the enablement test easily.
Now, test number two, the infrastructure test. The AI asks, does this action strengthen a shared public civil common, or does it enclose a public necessity for private MM prime gain?
Proposal A literally paves over a public ecological asset, the wetlands, to create a privately owned luxury center designed strictly to multiply capital for the developers. It is an enclosure of the commons. It fails spectacularly. Proposal B takes public money and creates a permanent shared public asset, the park and the clinic that belongs to everyone and strengthens the social immune system. Proposal B passes the infrastructure test.
Finally, test number three, the solvency or host test, the AI asks. Can the local environment, the water table, the air quality, the ecological balance sustain this action indefinitely without degradation?
Proposal A, the massive highway, encourages endless fossil fuel reliance, increases runoff pollution into the remaining water systems, and destroys biodiversity. It is inherently insolvent over the long term. Proposal B, the integrated park, actually manages local floodwaters naturally, cleans the air, and promotes local biodiversity. It is regenerative. It passes the solvency test.
Under the AI auditor's strictly logical life value framework, Proposal A, despite promising massive short-term financial returns, temporary construction jobs, and increased local tax revenues, is flagged as a systemic disvalue, an act of structural violence against the local life ground, and must be completely rejected. Proposal B is mathematically coherent and must be funded. It is a revolution in local logic.
As we finally reach the conclusion of this dense, incredibly profound white paper, the final message from Dr. Sarah-Lee and Gemini is surprisingly and incredibly empowering, especially considering the heavy terminal diagnostic we started with. The authors argue that humanity is not inherently evil or doomed. We are simply currently stuck in the cancer stage of the money sequence, a rebellious adolescent phase of our evolution where our systems blindly, unthinkingly multiply capital at the direct expense of the host, but we possess the full cognitive capacity to move beyond it.
They argue beautifully that our true evolutionary advantage as a species on this planet was never our physical force, our ability to conquer, or our capacity to extract resources. Our superpower is life knowledge. It is our unique, spectacular capacity to rigorously, scientifically understand the complex biological laws by which life is enabled, and then to consciously, intentionally design our social and technological systems to align with those laws. Capital, technology, artificial intelligence, innovation, none of these tools are inherently evil or destructive. They simply need to be firmly harnessed and directed with a singular, mathematically clear bottom line: preserving, protecting, and relentlessly expanding the biological life host.
And that is the ultimate empowering takeaway for you today. You, the listener, are not just a passive observer of this massive, sometimes terrifying global system. You are a living, breathing, active participant inextricably tied to the life ground. The paper asks us to do the hard psychological work to transcend our own tribal scripts, to recognize our cultural violence, and to begin demanding strict life coherence from our local and global institutions. We highly encourage you to take that three-question policy test: enablement, infrastructure, solvency, and actively apply it to the political and economic decisions happening in your own backyard, your own city council, or your own workplace.
It demands a total revolution in our everyday logic. It requires a conscious, difficult shift from the blind, comforting multiplication of money value to the rigorous, conscious protection of the life ground.
Which brings me to a final, slightly provocative, and deeply personal thought to leave you with as we wrap up. This entire framework proposes using an impartial, hyperlogical, emotionless AI to ruthlessly audit massive human geopolitical policy for life value in order to cure our global self-destructive blind spots. But I want you to imagine just for a second if that exact same unyielding AI auditor were applied strictly and intimately to your own personal daily life.
Oh, that's an intense thought.
Right. If it audited the company you work for, your daily consumption and purchasing habits, the specific companies nestled inside your 401k or retirement portfolio,
right,
what deeply ingrained money sequences might it clinically flag as a parasitic loop in your own existence? And the really challenging question is, are we truly ready as individuals to surrender our own comfortable daily disvalues to the cold, objective, life-saving math of a completely life-coherent machine?
That is an incredibly challenging, deeply uncomfortable thought to end on, but it is an absolutely necessary one if we are serious about achieving actual planetary solvency. The revolution has to start with our own metrics.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us on this incredibly dense, challenging, and fascinating deep dive into the Life Value Framework. We hope it gave you some powerful new lenses to view the chaotic world through. Keep questioning the metrics you were handed, keep exploring the life ground around you, and we will catch you on the next one.